Business Minds, presented by the Business Journals of Florida. Brought to you by TECO People's Gas, at the heart of Florida's energy. Artificial intelligence is a game changer in the legal profession, and Florida-based Holland & Knight is leading the transition. In this download, Tampa Bay Business Journal editor Alexis Milner connects with HK's new chair and CEO, Bob Gramig.
Bob Gramig, welcome to the Florida Business Minds podcast.
Very happy to be here, Alexis.
It's really great to have you. Now, you've practiced law for more than 30 years, and at Holland & Knight, your work has been broad, focused on public companies, mergers and acquisitions, securities law, general corporate law, international business, and the firm has deep Tampa and really Florida roots, but it's, over my tenure, it's grown immensely. Yeah, I know you're now at 30 offices in the United States and 5 abroad, and it continues to grow and evolve, and you've been a big part of that, having served on the firm's directors committee. But now, big change on the horizon for the firm and for you, because next month you will be the firm's next chair and CEO. Congratulations. And I want to start there. It's a competitive legal market. So talk about how the promotion came about and what some of your vision is for the first few months in the role.
Well, we have had Steve Sonberg has been our managing partner for the past 16 years. He's done an incredible job. He's driven our revenues by north of $800 million in that time period. He has greatly increased the scope of the firm. Its profitability has gone up significantly. Our presence throughout the U.S. and in Latin America has increased a great deal. I take my hat off to him as these incredible achievements he's been able to get for the firm. But going forward, we are going to have, primarily we're looking to continue in the direction we've gone. There's going to be significant continuity in what we're going to do, but we're also going to have to face some truly unique challenges now. Unique in the sense that it's of a magnitude, the technological change is of a magnitude that really law firms have not ever had to deal with, especially not have to deal with in such a short time. Because the artificial intelligence and behind that, the quantum computing is going to come at us very quickly. There's really a tsunami of change coming. Not so much in the structure of the firm, but it will be different in terms of how we practice law. We are on top of that situation and moving quickly to try to make sure that we're ready when the technology is really ready to roll out on client matters.
Sure. And we'll unpack some of that because I want to get a little more granular about both of those developments. And I think the readership, our audience, would want to know more about how to prepare like you've done. But internally, you being identified as the next CEO, how does that evolve at a firm like Holland & Knight? And then what are the first couple things that you do to begin making it your own?
Well, I think what happened at Holland & Knight is we had a system that was going to be just an election that anyone could throw their hat into. And that was, it was determined by our directors committee that that was really an invitation for chaos. So there was a lot of study done over the past couple of years. There were several committees set up, and basically the committees screened a number of candidates. And ultimately what happened was the number of candidates was winnowed down, and then ultimately I was selected to be the new CEO. We actually changed the titles, because Steve is a managing partner. We changed the title, that title, to be chair and CEO. We also have a managing partner, David Whitestone in Washington. He will be the managing partner. And then Tiffany Lee, who she's based in Miami, she will be the deputy managing partner. We sort of changed the structure around. Previously, there had been folks that had informally served in similar roles to Steve. But now we have a more formalized structure in that regard. In terms of what we're going to do initially, again, we're looking at all the jobs within the firm. We've actually come up with new job descriptions to face the updated challenges and opportunities that we have. There'll be some changes made, but, you know, not dramatic changes, but we'll realign some personnel. and then we will get ourselves ready to address, you know, this multitude of change that's going to be technologically driven, ranging everywhere from, you know, actually production of legal services to recruiting to marketing, you name it. There's going to be AI will affect everything, I think.
It's amazing to think about, and I wonder if this is too simplistic, but even just changing to the chairman and CEO title implies even a broader business focus, and you're peeling off some of your legal practice as well, and I'm curious to just personally how that feels. I think it's a really interesting and challenging time for law firms in terms of staying A, ahead of the tech, which I want you to give some examples for of how you're doing that, but also just competing in a market that where differentiation isn't so easy.
Well, I've been with the firm for 42 years now. During that time, I was heavily engaged in the practice of law, you know, every day, basically. And when you look at what I've done now, it's, essentially all the practice has been turned over to other partners. Now, we had a plan for this. I mean, and that's something that's very important in any law firm, to have succession plans. And so effectively, other than just a few very, very minor instances now in terms of time commitment, all of that has been transitioned. Everything's gone just fine. Now, the clients probably knew essentially who was going to take over on these various matters for several years now. It's no surprise, and that's an important thing and something that we emphasize within Holland & Knight, in that we need succession planning, because we're not isolated towers. We have a cooperative model, because that's how you grow business. That's how you properly serve clients. And so part of that is succession planning, and that business has been transitioned. I will tell you right now, though, it is very strange not to wake up every morning thinking about what you're going to do for client A, client B, client C that day, because it's so ingrained in what I did. Of course, now you have more time for reflection. You have more time to keep in touch with the general trends in the legal world and all that. It's quite a transition. And of course, all the requests from partners for wanting A, wanting B, wanting C.
Yeah, you're the go-to guy. And that changes the equation in so many ways. But for you, though, it is professional development. It is a vast, incredible opportunity personally.
Yes, it is. And, you know, I'm honored to be in the position, and I'm honored by the confidence of the partnership. We're looking to build upon an already good position.
Well, and the firm has, where I see differentiation, not only just the investment in Florida and how important you are to both Miami when I was there and in Tampa as a corporate citizen and as your attorneys and who's here, but also just the collaborative, inclusive culture that you've built. I know the human rights score was over 100. That's deep in your DNA.
Yes, I think we've always tried to distinguish ourselves in areas like inclusiveness, in areas such as the pro bono activity that we do, community service, service to the state. Our lawyers, if we're just looking at Florida right now, our lawyers are involved in all their communities heavily, in all the significant organizations in the state they play a big role in. And of course, on both sides of the political spectrum, we have folks that are deeply involved in interacting with the political leadership, which works to the benefit of our clients. And also, because we're on both sides of the political spectrum, we're able to assist our clients both in Tallahassee and in Washington much more effectively.
Indeed. And that's, you know, it bears out in the results. I want to get into unpacking a bit of the detail around the AI work that you're studying and the quantum accounting. But first, I know you grew up in Melbourne. What's the first point in your early years that law became your path and direction? I'm always curious about what's the spark.
Well, you know, it was probably about junior year in college when I was a history major, and I figured out, well, I better find something that I can get some gainful employment out of. Now, I was always interested in legal matters, and so it was sort of a natural progression, I guess, when you look at your options as a history major. And also, I was not attracted to the litigation side of things. You know, the deal doing side of things was always more interesting to me. which probably is a little bit unusual because I think most people are attracted to the legal profession to hop in the courtroom and be TV stars, basically. But that direction wasn't for me, but it was kind of a practical thing at some point where, you know, come on, you got to come up with a game plan to actually pay your student loans and things.
Were there models for lawyers in your family? What did your folks do?
My dad, he was in the Marine Corps, and then he ended up as a sergeant major, and then he was a ranger for Brevard County for another 25 years or so. Interestingly, he never graduated high school. And, you know, my mother, again, she was a high school graduate, but she was just a homemaker.
And they must have been proud about your ascension and growth.
Well, yeah, I think they were. And it's unfortunate my mother's not around now, but my father's still kicking. He still lives in the same house in Melbourne, and he's going to be 91 shortly. So he's...
Goodness, what a wonderful thing.
Very interesting how it all shook out.
Yeah, and then having that deep Florida roots, I imagine the context for just being in the state for so long provides a foundation for you that not only you've been able to bring to the firm, but also your clients.
I think it's been helpful in the state of Florida for sure. Seen it grow an awful lot. Really, growth that you couldn't have never anticipated would have ever happened. I mean, it was always, you go back to the 60s and 70s, Florida was always a growing state. But to see the exponential growth is hard to really imagine at that time what it would be like.
Yeah, and you had years of service in the Florida Chamber of Commerce as a chair-elect, international business. I mean, you have operated on a statewide level, which I think, again, further allows you to understand the complexities, because I certainly, when I went out to Tampa in 2004, after spending a lot of years in Miami, they are very different MSAs, they're very different energies. And so I think understanding that definitely puts you in a good position now. And then this seat is definitely in Tampa. You're staying in Tampa for this, correct?
Yes, I'll stay in Tampa, but you know, I've admitted in Washington and New York. I'll have some office space there, and I'm on the road an awful lot. We've got those 35 offices, and including the ones overseas. And this year I will get around to all the offices, and many of them multiple times. And so there's a lot of responsibilities in that regard. But you know, if you look at historically what we've done in Florida, I would also add that the Florida Chamber of Commerce is sort of really probably the most effective group in Tallahassee. Folks like Mark Wilson have built that into a real juggernaut. And if you are in the leadership of the Florida Chamber, you do get to know folks from all over the state, and you get really informed on issues facing the state. And the interaction between that the Florida Chamber and the governor and the senators and the people in Congress and the state legislature really is an amazing experience. And that helped a tremendous amount.
I concur. I saw Mark Wilson speak fairly recently, and it was a short talk, about 10 or 15 minutes, and it was packed with really helpful knowledge and understanding and things that surprised me, you know, even things I thought I knew. I want to take you, Bob, back to the AI and the tech work, which is obviously part of your preparation for this role. And it's fascinating to hear that you've altered job descriptions as well. Give us some examples of some of the things that people may be surprised to hear and didn't know.
Yeah, I think that in a very short period of time that we will see first drafts of everything done by AI, whether it's complaints, whether it's contracts, $5 billion merger agreements, you name it, everything is going to go in that direction. And the other thing about it is, and there's going to be all kinds of levels of expenditures that you're going to be able to make in order to get more bells and whistles. And that's one thing that's going to be significant, I think, for us and for a number of other firms, having adequate size to be able to make these investments. Because I do think that the AI will provide you alternative language. You know, it'll have a base document that'll come out that it will produce. It might say you're against Sue Jones at ABC firm. And in the last five big deals on the indemnity provision, she's agreed to this language over here. And your base language is very similar to her number four. Would you like to just put that in there? and maybe eliminate a negotiating point. I think it's going to be very, as it goes forward, it's going to be very proactive. I think it already is. I've seen in many instances on the marketing side, on interaction with clients, it can be very useful and very helpful in terms of making comments and making suggestions as to what might be helpful to the client during the course of a conversation. It is really going to change everything across the board. And it is, again, I can't emphasize how quickly it's coming. And I think things like the billable hour, which has been the basis of American law for so long, I think that that's going to fall away. And we're going to end up in a situation where it's going to be pricing by the deal, pricing by the litigation matter in many, if not most cases. So I think it's a sea change that's going to happen.
Bob Gramig joining us. Next, he shares how his team is handling change as Florida Business Minds continues. People's Gas, working with businesses across Florida to lower energy usage and costs with efficient natural gas. Get cashback energy conservation rebates when you install new natural gas equipment. Learn more at peoplesgas.com/bizrebates.
I imagine there are some, as you think about your roster, of very talented people, admin to legal partners and associates, that the willingness to accept that change, which may help reduce time, make things more efficient, but at the same time has a certain veneer of robot, you know, there's probably going to be a mixed bag in terms of acceptance. How are you navigating that sort of mental part of the game?
Well, I think the people are going to have to accept. I think most of our lawyers accept it. If there's a tsunami coming at you, you can deny it's coming and get swept away. Or even though you don't like it, you know, maybe you move to higher ground and maybe you figure out how to deal with it. And I think people will do that. One of the things that we will do, I think it's going to change recruiting. I think it's going to change the skill set that law schools need to produce. I think it's going to be very challenging for law schools to adjust to actually produce the kind of skill sets that are going to be useful for law firms. I think the traditional rankings and the desirability of people coming from certain law schools may change drastically in the upcoming years. I mean, things will be completely different 5 years from now, I'm convinced. But I do think that people who understand prompt engineering and things like that, they're going to have a huge advantage. And also, I think we and other law firms are going to hire many more technical people to help deal with addressing all this change that's going to come about.
And the investments that firms need to make in terms of AI and software and technical people, I imagine has to do with making it more efficient, AI in general, to create these documents and make them work for you versus against you. Is that an accurate read?
Yes. And I also think one of the key things right now is figuring out, you know, which platform to use. I mean, there's a lot of competition out there now, ranging from the Microsofts of the world to the startups. And you want to make sure that you make the appropriate investments in platforms, because it could be very costly if you go down one route and then you realize you need to change.
And I imagine, as I've watched other firms, your competitors, colleagues, you know, we're working on providing consultancy services, thought leadership, for lack of a better or worse hacking term. But and I saw on the front page of your website, there are posts about value-based care and the Inflation Reduction Act, and you are working to help all your clients internally, externally, to understand and navigate a current, to your point, changes.
Yes, I think that will be driven even more by AI. I think there's going to be more opportunities because, again, I think the lawyers will have more time to do marketing type pieces, to do thought leadership type pieces, because their day-to-day work will get quicker. They will have, you know, again, more time to spend, and they will be aided by AI in creating these pieces. And marketing will become more and more important, I think, because they will have extra time and they will use the extra time to help drive more business. Because as efficiencies go, I do believe that the clients, you know, the AI is not going to just be a one-way street. They're going to expect to get something back from some of these efficiencies. So keep growing the pie is going to be really crucial for us going forward.
It's interesting. I find law to be a creative world. I speak as a creative in journalism, and I'm lucky I've done multimedia my entire life. I started taking pictures when I was 7 and continue to this day. And I think there's a lot of thought that goes into those kinds of decisions. And if I'm hearing you correctly, it seems like the AI will help with, for lack of a better term, any kind of drudgery or routine route kinds of practices and allow lawyers to be more thoughtful in terms of their legal strategies. Is that your hope?
I think so. And it's going to be in two ways. One, you'll have more time to think about it, the individual lawyer. But also when, let's say, a draft complaint goes out, or the AI then is going to, you could ask the AI, well, what's a different way to approach this? And the other point of it is, it'll be, what's a different way to approach this, especially with Judge X in the Southern District of Florida? How has she reacted to this? Is there a better way of going about it? And it'll have loads of data in there. It'll, you know, how has she ruled on similar cases before or on similar motions? It's hard to imagine the amount of information that the lawyer is going to have at his or her fingertips when they're drafting for courts, but also across the board.
I imagine in appellate decisions especially, there'll be information that could just be aggregated in a way that you never could have done in an instant.
For sure, for sure. And, you know, you'll have statistical probabilities of success, and it's going to be, you know, they'll presumably, you could even have what are likely questions in an appellate argument that will come up based upon the historical transcripts of in similar cases. I mean, it's really going to be a dramatic change.
We were joking before we got together on this call about how technology has changed and what the old days look like. Wow, what a difference, eh?
Well, I do remember when I started, there weren't any fax machines. There was no overnight delivery services. If you wanted to redline or blackline a document, you did it by hand. They would drop documents in the mail for you to review from New York or someplace. And you might get it in 2 days or 3 days, but it would be U.S. mail, so nobody knew. It was much more leisurely pace, I guess, and it's kind of quaint to think about it, but when the overnight delivery first came out, I remember we would never make the 5:30 pickup deadlines, but they knew we weren't. So we were actually allowed to just drive our cars onto the tarmac at Tampa International and take it right up to the plane that was flying wherever it was. Now, this was, of course, well before 9/11, but they would just leave the gate open and we would drive in. So it's kind of amazing how things have changed and how dramatically from the old days.
It's remarkable to think about that. And you are staying ahead of it by doing all this study and realizing, hey, we got to get on top of this. Do you have a sense that the competitors, not speaking for them, but how far ahead are you than others, or is this something that you're hearing at conferences among your peers and competitors that they're taking similar actions to you, or is this something, you know, you feel like you're ahead on?
I think the vast majority are taking actions that are significant. Now, the question is, who's taking the correct actions? I mean, everybody is developing their internal abilities on AI and their technical abilities. Nobody's really rolling that out, and most of them are being kind of quiet about what they're doing other than saying they're doing it. There's no real way of knowing if you're ahead or behind. I think the bottom line is most of the big law firms in the country are really on top of it. As you get into smaller competitors, maybe not so much. And also part of it is the cost. I mean, if you have $1.8 billion in revenue, you're in a much better situation than, say, if you're a small firm and you've got $50 million in revenue. That's a challenge there to spend on the technology.
And the spend on the technology is on both engineers and on the software and the engines that you get the results from. Is that true?
Absolutely. And then just having people that have time to be able to look at what's out there in the market, as opposed to be dealing with emergency situations on the IT front effectively within the firm.
Fascinating. Well, we're beginning to wind up. You know, congratulations to you, Bob, again, for taking on this role, changing your world, letting your, you know, things be disrupted for you, but also addressing the disruption head on. Is there a further acquisition in the firm's future? I know that there was a Nashville acquisition. I'm not sure if that's the last, but is that part of your growth plan as well?
Yes, I think, we recognize we need to continue to grow. So we will absorb a number of laterals during the course of the year. But we are very particular on these opportunities. We really want strategic opportunities. We did the Thompson & Knight transaction in Texas a couple of years ago. We're now the second largest firm in Dallas. We're the sixth largest in Texas. That was an incredible boon for us to get into what is inevitably going to be the largest legal market in the United States over the next few years. It really helped us in energy, et cetera. But we also, in Tennessee, we did the Waller transaction. That really catapulted us into the very first rank in healthcare. That firm was really noted for its healthcare practice. And we are in a dominant position in Tennessee right now. Going forward, hard to say. We will be looking to grow in our money center markets, but also in these growth markets, because we firmly believe that we are setting ourselves up for the future, for the next 20, 30 years, especially in these markets where we'll definitely have the wind in our sails, because the demographic changes and the changes in cash flows into these markets is going to be huge. And we want to be ahead of the curve on that too.
Well, the firm is in good hands. And I will say, in my 20 years of my role here, we've had a really good collaborative rapport. I mean, conflict does drive news stories. And the business journals, Miami, Jacksonville, Orlando, here in Tampa, are all, you know, make a big premium on breaking news. And so one of the things the CEO, I get to pitch you is, let's continue that dialogue with our reporting teams across the state and break some news, talk about some of the issues that your clients are having, because the facts of those cases can inform our audience. So we look forward to working with you and spreading the word and meeting with your folks around the state.
Yeah, we would be happy to continue a dialogue, have a continuous dialogue with you, and try to help bring you some insights into what's going on.
That was my not-so-obvious plug at the end of our podcast. Bob, listen, it's a pleasure. Thank you so much for taking the time.
Thank you very much, Bob.
Thank you for downloading Florida Business Minds, presented by the Business Journals of Florida. Brought to you by TECO Peoples Gas, at the heart of Florida's energy.